So for what we're going to do today in family study, you can partially blame our brother Joe Carlin for how today's going to go. Okay. Joe and I had a good conversation following, I think it was after the service last week, about the possibility of giving the class opportunity to answer objections themselves as a class. And so we're going to take that opportunity today. We've spent a lot of time over the last 5 months, maybe, thinking through how to respond to objections, thinking through authority, depravity, how the question of a standard, the nature of truth, goodness, and beauty. We've thought about those things. And so what I'd like to do for this morning is put you to the test, so to speak. So I have seven basic objections that I've written down that I think encapsulate the typical objections that you're going to hear as you're sharing the gospel. And what I'd like us to do, with little help from me, I will provide some help, but it's really, I want to put it on your shoulders so that you can take advantage of what we've been learning and apply it and come up with answers to these objections. Now, I want everyone to be involved as much as possible, so I'd like to divide us up into teams, if we can. So that way, you're working on these questions as a team, and then we'll see what the various teams come up with. Does that make sense to everybody? You're willing to participate with that? So I don't know how many, what we need to limit our teams to. I didn't take a head count for how many people we have here. But I think if we say you have to have a minimum of five people on your team, and so we'll go with it. Well, let's say a minimum of five and a maximum of seven on your team, okay? So that way we'll see how many teams we can come up with. So take a moment, form yourselves into teams. You're going to want someone with pen and paper who is able to take notes down, and then I'll start asking the questions, and we'll see what you come up with. So divide into teams right now. Carlin's, you're in trouble because I've purposely limited the size of the teams so that you cannot turn yourselves into one super team.
A maximum of eight.
All right, so this table will be a team. Let me know when you're ready. And we're not keeping score or anything. This is just a way to ensure everyone's getting involved. And if you need a lifeline, let me know and I'll provide what help I can. Yeah. You're ready?
Are you writing down the seven objections?
I've got them right here. I'm going to read them to you.
Okay.
We'll start with the first one.
Now, if we don't get it through all seven this week, can we do it next week?
We'll see.
I know how we are.
You know how we are, huh?
We get into a lot of discussion.
We do. I'll tell you something. For me, I've learned the most through having huge swaths of time. Like Bill York. He and I, we have talked till 4 a.m. We start the evening and we just go. And it's good and fruitful. It's not just recycling the same ideas over and over again. It's making progress and wrestling with something. There's a lot to be said for that.
I think we should pick one evening, at least one
week. Oh, yes.
Where we can all come and spend 3 hours here.
Well, that's. I'm going to be getting that in place this coming week, actually. Yeah. Yeah, another evening. One evening a month for where we do even more teaching and discussion. Yeah. Maybe even work through something. So, because there's a desire for it. And if we only have three people, okay. So.
Because if you and Bill Yorba can do it,
you have a choice. Yeah, Bill and I get out of hand sometimes with that.
He can attest to that.
It's good, though. It is really.
Just all the emails.
We're ready.
Notifications on Facebook.
I don't even, yeah, and I don't even go to the one, so I don't even participate. You can't blame me for that. Okay, Lindsay, are you the only Murgi, or there's, all right.
So they can be with the banks table.
You can be with the banks table. Yeah, John, we're dividing up into teams.
Every table is.
You claim John. Oh, I forgot to mention, he's not on a team. You cannot have Pastor Murgi on a team. He's a lifeline. You can seek his help, but he's not allowed to be on a team. So what we're doing, John, we're dividing up into teams, a maximum of 8 members, and then I'm going to give people objections to the faith, and then they're going to compose responses, and we're going to consider those. And it's giving a class an opportunity to apply what we've been discussing for most of 2018. And so, all right, do we have our teams established? Lindsay and Laura need to be on a team. All right. Everyone's got a team? What are your team names? Do we have any team names? Yes, Jason, what are you guys?
We're Falcon's Claw.
Your Falcon's Claw? Wouldn't it be Talon? No? Falcon's Claw. That. All right, Falcon's Claw. What are you guys? What's this table? No.
The Wisdom of Wops.
The Wisdom of the Federation? How about that one? The Federation? Are you guys ready to go? We got a team over here, and we have a team over here. Do you guys have any team names? You're the what? The Courageous Carlins. Okay. What's that?
The Romans.
The Romans. So you guys are a separate team.
Yes.
You got the Courageous Carlins versus the Romans. Interesting. And what is this team over here? Do you guys have a team name?
The Snake That Eats Falcons.
The Snake That Eats Falcons. All right. The Snake That Eats Falcons. All right.
The Federation.
They're the Federation in honor of Bob. His love for Star Trek. This team is the Federation. The United Federation of Planets, right, Bob?
Right.
Okay.
We're going to boldly go.
We're the wingnuts.
Go boldly go.
We're the wingnuts.
We're no evangelists. The wingnuts. All right, here's the first objection. We'll go through them one by one, all right? And then after we've worked through this one, we'll work through the next one, all right? Here's objection number one. Science proves that God does not exist. Science proves that God does not exist. So there's your objection. Come up with a response to that. Go. Talk amongst yourselves. If you have a question, let me know. And we'll give you a few minutes to work on it. Science proves that God does not exist.
I think I'm happy to. What's the damage?
How would you do that? Just prove this.
I see people going through their notes. That's
so
good.
Are you
one of the Falcon claws? You guys already have an answer?
Yeah, a few.
Yeah, all right, good job.
Science is symmetric as objective.
You need it. I think you need it. To have an objective truth.
Did we say what's their proof?
What is your evidence or proof?
What's your proof? Yeah, evidence.
Science doesn't say.
Okay, they say they're ready.
Order, chaos, predictability.
Which teams are still working? Raise your hand if you're sorry. You guys are still working? Courageous Carlins, are you ready? Are you still working? You're ready? All right. The Romans are still working. How about the Federation or the Wingnuts? You're ready? Okay. So we'll hold on for a little bit.
You're already there. You took that job.
Oh, I am?
Yeah, you took the job.
You speak for the group.
And then some told me
she's
what is that?
Oh, that box
is
that
Bob?
Beat me up, Scotty.
That's the sound that will be made at the rapture.
That's okay. I think the most important part is what's the proof, what's the evidence.
So what's your definition of science? What is your evidence?
Okay, Romans, how are we doing? You're good? All right. Everyone's ready.
But our immediate response.
All right. Do any of the teams want to volunteer to go first in answering this question, or should I just pick on someone? Any volunteers? All right. Okay, we'll go with the falcon's claw. So the objection, science proves that God does not exist. What is your reply?
Well, first of all, there's never been a case I've known of a snake eating. This is going to be the first case.
That's right.
Falcon eat snakes. That's what they do, especially ones with claws.
Or talons, but anyway.
So we thought you were a baby falcon. All right, one of the things we would say is, first of all, do you believe in proof? Because your question, we're addressing the person.
Okay.
You say science proof, do you believe in proof? And they say yes. Proof presupposes truth. How do you account for truth in your worldview?
Okay. So how do you account for truth?
Put it on them.
Okay.
Try to come up with an explanation.
Definition of truth, definition of proof.
Proof,
right. Those two things go together, all right?
They're acknowledging in the question that they believe there's proof that can be put forward.
Okay.
Which presupposes truth.
Yep.
How do they come up with truth according to their worldview?
In a definition.
They don't rob from mine.
Right.
I'm standing on mine. I have an explanation, but how do you account for it?
Right. Right. Taking God out of the picture. So God doesn't exist, all right? Science assumes objective truth can be known. What is objective truth? How do we know it? And how does science prove that? All right.
I think Ari came up with define science, first of all.
Okay. Excellent question, Ari. Define science. What is science? And what, we talked about that, what is science by definition? Yeah, it's observation, experimentation, right? We're studying that which we can perceive, that which we can test. That's what science is. All right.
To seek out new civilizations.
To seek out.
Thank you. Only go where no man has gone.
Thank you, James T. Kirk. Okay.
What is your experiment?
Yeah. All right. So let's jump over to the Federation or the Wingnuts, depending on who you ask. Just call them the Klingons.
The Klingons.
All right. Klingons, here's the objection. Science proves that God does not exist. What is your response?
Well, most of what Jason said we came up with as well.
Okay.
As far as, you know, what is your definition of science?
Okay.
And where does that come from? And how does science prove that God doesn't exist? Show us how it proves that he doesn't exist.
Okay.
Because you've got proof to me that he doesn't, and how can you do that? Because I don't
right.
think you can do that. I'm not going to say that. What experiment, of course, do you use to show us that God doesn't exist? And that's kind of basically what we...
Okay, so you're
what was your evidence?
Yeah, you're going after their very definition of truth. You're appealing to their standard. By what standard? How do you know these things? Now, a more sophisticated atheist is not going to posit the objection this way. A more sophisticated atheist is going to say, knows better, knows that this is actually fallacious. You can't prove a negative. So a more sophisticated objection would be there is inadequate evidence to prove that God exists. So it wouldn't be, they wouldn't claim science proves his non-existence. They would say there is not sufficient evidence to warrant belief in his existence. and they would, and then they'd shift the burden of proof to us by making that objection. But this is how the objection is going to be most often, I think, stated by your run-of-the-mill unbeliever or your garden variety unbeliever. You're going to talk in these terms. They're not going to be very philosophically sophisticated, which is why I stated it in this way. But, okay, so you're going after the authority and standard. Very good. All right, Romans, you guys took some time. What did you come up with? Sorry, I didn't mean to catch you just as you're finishing off your donut. Andrew, I can come back to you if you'd like. Are you good? Okay.
We just want to ask them if they would say that's an absolute truth claim.
Okay.
And then follow that up with, of course, they're going to say yes, that's why they said it. And then we'll ask them, so how do they know that? How do they know that's absolutely true? For me, as it is for them.
Okay. Okay. All right. Very good. Courageous Carlins.
All right. So we would say that science, first of all, doesn't prove anything. Like, you know, it's an observation that could possibly be wrong.
Okay.
So it can't prove that God doesn't exist because he might exist.
Right.
And then we'd ask him by what standard are they causing that God doesn't exist.
All right.
How do they know?
Okay. How do we know science? How can you use science to prove science?
Right.
Very good. And then the snake that eats the falcon.
So, we would say that science is a tool that can be applied to the physical world.
Okay.
But it's not something that has anything to do with this question because God is part of the spiritual world.
Okay.
And so it's not an authority.
Okay. Very good. So they're confusing categories. They're trying to apply a standard of testing or measurement to God, and God is supernatural. He's transcendent, and since he's transcendent, he is not subject to scientific investigation for that. But they're treating him as if he were a creature, something that could be observed, but God, by definition, is unobservable and imperceptible. So what you're touching on there, and that's a pretty sophisticated response, because you're touching upon the equivocation that's going on there. And what's an equivocation, everybody? Can you recall what an equivocation is? You swap. You change the definition without acknowledging you've done so. And so, and that's when an objector says, well, there's not adequate proof to prove that God exists. They're equivocating their definition of God. They're redefining him as a creature as opposed to the transcendent creator. And so that is another possible avenue to follow with them. Say, well, you're talking about a God I don't believe in. I don't affirm the existence of this creaturely God whose existence is subject to scientific investigation. God, by definition, is transcendent and metaphysical. He can't be tested in that. Just as much as love. How do you test love? How do you subject love to science, right? Or truth itself. How do you subject the definition of truth to scientific investigation? You can't because it's metaphysical, right? It transcends the physical world. Very good. All right. Any other thoughts on that? Yes, Jim.
You could use the same arguments with the agnostic.
With the agnostic who says, I'm not sure God might exist or he may not.
Or he's unknowable.
Okay, or he's unknowable.
Yeah.
Because what is the agnostic assuming when he makes the statement God is unknowable?
Well, he might be there.
And he's assuming he can know that.
Yeah.
He's assuming he can know that God is unknowable. But how does he know that God is unknowable? He's still assuming a standard of truth that he can comprehend himself. And so now he's got to account for that. He's got to account for that knowledge.
It all comes down to a level of personal faith.
It does come down. It comes down to the question of what is your object of faith? Is it God or is it yourself? Kathy?
Isn't the same for an atheist that said there is no God, which assumes that there is? So it's the same argument, isn't it? Even an atheist says there's no God and I hate him?
Yes. Because he's like Cornelius Van Til would say, atheists have to sit on God's lap in order to slap him.
Exactly.
Like a child with a father.
I don't think they understand what they're saying when they say that.
No, well, they wouldn't have. And honestly, the only way you can come to understand these things is through the work of the Spirit. Because in our depravity, our logic is man-centered. Our thinking is man-centered. We're the standard of truth. And so we measure everything according to ourselves and not God. Right. All right. Very good, everyone. Notice some commonality in those answers. You're looking through your notes. And listen, is that a very intimidating objection for you now? Not really. Not really. So you should be feeling equipped. You're like, hey, you can handle that objection. Or any kind of version of it might be thrown at you. You can handle that. Yes?
Nathan, you touched on something that I think is really important, and that's the way that that's framed is trying to prove the negative.
Yes.
Which is very different than just giving some evidence that something does approve. When you're saying that something does not exist, cannot, that's an exhaustive.
That's an absolute knowledge. Statement. Yes.
Right. And so that can never be true because no one has exhaustive knowledge of all things to show that it.
That's
so
right.
That negative is, I just wanted to point that out. That's very different than just proving something might exist or an example of. You have to have exhaustive knowledge to
right.
prove that, which no one has.
The most consistent atheist would say, would ultimately end up as an agnostic saying, based on our observation to this point, we have found no evidence to support the existence of God. Such evidence may exist. If it does, we have not yet found it. If he's being intellectually honest and consistent. Because as John was saying, in order to say we know for a fact God does not exist, that would require omniscience, knowing everything about everything, and coming to an absolute conclusion based upon your omniscient knowledge of everything that exists. Human beings simply cannot do that. We don't even know everything about our own oceans. We don't even understand the nature of the connection between our own bodies and minds. The mind-body problem, it's called. We still haven't figured that one out. We still don't understand the nature of thought itself or of consciousness. So we don't, to a large extent, we don't even know what we are. And so it's pretty audacious of us to say, but we do know, I don't know what I am, but I know that God doesn't exist. Well, if you don't know what you are, how do you even know what God is and that he doesn't exist? That doesn't make any sense. All right. Well, very good. Let's move on to the next question. We have time. This one should be pretty straightforward. All right. Here's the next question, teams. Here it is. Since evil exists, God must not exist. Since evil exists, God must not exist. And this objection can take on a lot of different forms, but this is the heart of it, the problem of evil. Since evil exists, God must not exist.
How do we know the wrong ones?
Well, look at them.
Because they never joined the Federation.
They didn't join the Federation. They got those pointy ears.
They joined the Federation.
The Klingons joined the Federation? Oh, that was later.
Okay, so what's our answer? They're admitting that evil exists. Refer to question one.
Yeah. They are admitting that evil exists. I take notes. He said it.
Yeah, I know. So how would you frame that?
What is your standard?
How are we doing, teams? Who's still working? Show us by hands. Who's still working? Still working? Bethany, are you guys still going? Okay. Snakes, you guys done? You're good? Okay. Falcon's Claw? You guys done? You good? Federation, Klingons, Wingnuts? Tribbles, there we go. The trip. I made her laugh. I like that, Ivy. Very nice. We good? All right. So I believe all the teams are done, if I'm not mistaken. We can begin working through. This question is the first two questions are very related, of course, as we're about to find out, I imagine. But it's good to think of them in distinction from one another. And there are thornier questions. I don't know if we're going to get to them this week. Probably not, but perhaps we'll address them next week. But for now, let's see what you came up with. And we'll start, let's start with, well, any volunteers? I'll ask that first. Anyone brave enough to volunteer to go first? Okay, the Romans.
So we'll just, right off the bat, tell them that our God punishes evil, so the existence of evil doesn't necessarily mean that he can't exist.
Okay.
Obviously, there is evil, but in their worldview, where does that idea of evil even come from?
Okay.
As we can account for it, our God decides what's evil and what's not, but in their worldview, who gets to decide that?
Okay. Okay, so how do you know what evil is? You acknowledge evil exists. How do you know that? So again, you're going on the offensive. You're turning the objection around and aiming it at them. How do you know? By what standard do you know that evil exists? Lindsay and the snakes.
So they have to define evil first, because in order, you can't have an understanding what evil is without understanding what good is first.
Okay.
And so we'd ask them what their standard for good and evil is. Where are they getting that?
Okay.
How do they know what those words mean?
All right. Very good. So again, going after the standard, like with the first question, how do you know what science, this, how do you know good from evil? What's the standard by which you make that determination? Falcons.
Okay, so what we said is it's basically a loaded question.
Okay.
Because they're assuming evil without, they don't have a standard to
assume
it's evil. So, like, if we were all stardust, how is shooting somebody evil if it's just for the greater good or anything like that? So
evil.
They don't have a standard.
Okay.
In which to prove evil.
To appeal to it. So they haven't actually proven that evil actually does exist.
Mm-hmm.
At that point.
Yeah, we're trying to force them to see that they are their own standard of evil, and that we are pointing to a transcendent
standard
of good.
That's right. That's right. Pointing to God, a self-revealing, absolute standard. They're appealing to themselves, which is a horrible standard. All right? And clean out.
Basically, who is your authority for good and evil?
Okay.
And is there an overarching standard for good and evil? And if it is, what is it? And where does it come from?
Okay.
And how do you determine which standard is?
The right one.
The right one.
How do you determine?
Is it your opinion of what good and evil is?
Yeah.
Or is there a higher standard for that?
Excellent response, everybody. You all went right for the jugular, which is the only way to really... Oh, I did not... Courageous Carlins, I left you out. I'm sorry. I will... Go for it. Sorry, Madison.
All right, so what we got is that without a standard for good and evil, you can't know what good and evil is. So, you know, what's good, what's evil,
yep.
How do you know what it is without a standard?
That's right.
Also, that we reject the premise of the argument because they're assuming that without, or that if there's evil, then God doesn't exist.
Right.
And how do you get there?
Right. So your faulty premise, your objection falls apart because your premise is faulty, it's no good. It's actually fallacious because there's actually an unspoken premise in there that is evil exists, and you haven't substantiated that, you haven't proven that yet. So prove evil exists. Yes.
I think most people in my family would answer that question by saying that because God respects our free will so highly that he allows us to choose, and that's why we have evil in the world.
Okay. Now, how would you respond to that?
How would you respond to that?
That. You guys always do this. Joe did it with predestination once, like 3 minutes left, and now Jason, sovereignty of God, human responsibility. Hey, Nate, can you cover that in like 3 minutes? It's like, how would I respond to that? I would say that, again, when it comes to understanding human freedom and human moral responsibility, it's all about understanding our context and our nature. What are we? We have to start there. Before we even start talking about what is the nature of human responsibility, you have to answer the question, what is man? And the answer is man is not God. Man is a creature. And once you grant that man is a creature, that carries with it a whole slew of limitations upon man, right? Starting with the fact that man is conditioned by his context. He does not condition reality conditions him, right? So nature, in other words, we are all subject to what we are. We cannot change what we are, all right? What we are is our human beings. More specifically, what we are fallen human beings, okay? And so the fact that I sin does not make me evil. It is not my sin that makes me evil. My sin proves that I am evil, all right? And that's where responsibility inheres. My actions prove what I am. They're evidence that demonstrate my true nature, which is why I'm judged for the evil things I do. Why? Because they prove that I am actually a wicked man. This is exactly what the Lord is getting at in passages such as Luke 6:45, where he says that out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. Meaning what? Meaning our words reveal who and what we really are. Which is why he also says that we will be judged for every foolish, evil word we speak. We're going to be judged for that. Why? Because our words reveal what we are. And so, getting back to your question of, well, the reason why evil exists is because God simply allows it. Well, in one sense, that's true, because we want to do evil. When we commit evil acts, we do it freely, meaning we're not coerced into it. We're doing things by nature that deserve death, right? This is what Paul says in Ephesians 2. So, the fact is, the point is, I'm doing it by nature. I want to do evil. And so that proves that I am a fallen creature. The thing I want to avoid, because that's, and that response that you suggested your family would present or posit, suggests that somehow evil is outside of God's control. That evil is something God had to react to, because he created us with free will and we chose to sin, and so now he's got to react to this evil that we are almost imposing upon him. And it's not how evil works. God wrote the story that way. He's the sovereign author. And as we've discussed in the past, evil is part of his plan. He's using evil for good to glorify himself.
The cross demonstrates that.
The cross demonstrates that. That's exactly right. And so the important thing is to realize evil is not this aberrant thing that God is reacting to. Evil is being used by God to accomplish his purposes. And so it's not merely because we have free will and that's why evil came into the world. That is certainly part of the equation. But ultimately, given God's sovereignty over all things, it is God who wrote the story in such a way that evil would occur, and then he would redeem us from it and glorify himself through it. So I always want to emphasize God's sovereignty over evil. Like Luther said, the devil is God's devil. Jim?
Well, I would go on and build off of the man's will is not really free until he's been the recipient of God's mercy and forgiveness and redemption.
Well, you're free in terms of being free from sin. That's right.
Having a choice. I can choose to sin or I can choose to not sin.
That's right. You're enslaved to sin.
I don't have a choice.
You're enslaved to sin. That's right. You're enslaved to sin. Outside of the Holy Spirit giving us the second birth, we're going to be enslaved to it. But once you're in Christ, you're able to say no. Okay, yes, Kathy.
I think that if there wasn't evil, if we didn't understand our nature, we can't understand who God is to glorify him. Because if there is no good and evil, then I'm just good all the time. I really can't look at myself and say I'm a sinful person because
sure.
I disobey what God has.
Good is in the eye of the beholder at that point.
At that point, it becomes, I never done anything bad.
Which
not
is
according to who.
But that is fallen man's working assumption.
Yeah.
I'm innocent.
So you can't.
I'm a victim.
Say that I'm a sinner. Well, I'm a great sinner and he's a great God. I can't say that because I don't. I'm saying, well, evil exists, so there can't be a God.
Right, because all these bad things happen.
Yeah, because why did these bad things happen? But if they happen, then there has to be something that's good. So it's like a circular argument with them.
Yeah, well, because
it
is a circularity that's present there, and it's a man-centered circularity as opposed to a God-centered.
Right.
Man, you have to have a self-validating authority.
Exactly.
The question is, what is or who is that self-validating authority? Is it man or is it God? And those who make this objection are treating man as a self-validating authority, not God.
Putting man on the pedestal.
And that's what makes it evil. Yes, Joe.
Well, I'm asking if, you know, his relatives there, again, five white standard, they're taking, it seems like they're taking God and they're making God subject to this highest rule, and the highest rule is man's free will.
Mm-hmm.
And God is subject to it. So somehow it would be wrong for God to impose his will on ours or make us do something.
Right.
Which is silly in that we exist. So.
And he didn't ask our permission. That's my point, Joe, exactly. That's why I was saying at the outset, before we get to the question of evil and man's responsibility, we have to answer the question, what is man? What is man? And once you establish, wait, man's a creature, as soon as that's acknowledged, and I'd love to see someone argue against that, that man is not a creature, but a God. It's like, okay, go for it. Let's hear that argument. Great. And now create something out of nothing, please. I'd like to see that. Demonstrate your omnipotence and your omniscience. But once you establish that man is a creature, you're establishing that he, by definition, is conditioned by forces outside of his control, because that's what it is to be a creature. To be a creature is to be contingent, and to be contingent is to be subject to being conditioned by things outside of your control, because you're not God, and you can't control everything. So things are naturally imposed upon you. Now, the twisted thing is that fallen man thinks in the terms of God imposing things upon him, imposing existence, imposing this, imposing that. But if we're thinking biblically, how should we think about God creating us, for example? Should we think of God creating you as an imposition?
That's grace.
It's grace. It's grace. It's a gift.
Mm-hmm. Free gift.
That's a free gift. So fallen man sees God's sovereignty, his wielding of his sovereignty over us, like creating us and assigning us our parents and the time in which we live, our gender, all that. Those are all impositions from the perspective of fallen man. But from the perspective of regenerate man, redeemed man, those impositions are instead seen as gifts, as grace. And that shows you how warped and twisted we are in our depravity. We look at God's gifts and we see them as curses. We see them as impositions. I think I touched on that in the sermon last week, you know, using our children as an example. Our world treats children as an imposition and not as a blessing. All right. Well, I have a whole slew of other questions. Well, not a whole slew. I have seven total. So we have five other questions to work through. These are the softballs that I threw you today. Yes, John.
I was going to say, too, as we go through these,
that's a good thing to keep.
Folks that have had these conversations, you know that the real world is very messy with
yes.
these. And because there might be good arguments, it doesn't mean that folks are just automatically going to go, oh, that makes sense. No. They will typically not respond
no.
in that way. So that can be frustrating.
People. Yes.
So this is not to present as though it just all goes well.
It will. Yes, it will not be this straightforward in real life as it has been here. It'll be messy, and you'll have to continually repeat the same thing over and over again in different ways with a lot of patience and grace. Patience and grace, patience and grace, without compromise. I can't emphasize that enough. The point is, I want you all to know, realize, I can handle this stuff. I can answer these questions. These are not going to hang me if they're thrown at me. I can wrestle through these. And the key is, who's your standard? How do you know that? That makes it simplifies it. That way, you don't have to be a university-trained apologist in order to field objections to the faith. All you need to do is think like a consistent Christian who can argue coherently and logically with appeal to God's authority, and you can handle these things. Now, the questions we're going to work through in the next week, Lord willing, are going to be a bit thornier, but you'll be able to handle them. The same principles that you used in fielding these two objections, you'll be able to use in fielding the objections we'll cover next week. Is this helpful? Should we continue this next week?
Yes, yes.
Very good. All right. Thank you, everyone. We will stop there.